I would like to begin with thanking the administration of the Institute and David in particular for inviting me to this beautiful place and also for giving me the honor to speak before such a distinguished audience. I will talk about the field which has developed over the last, I would say, 10 years. And it's a relatively big field. In the first 5 years of that development, I always tried to give a review talk on that, but now it's not really possible. So I will concentrate on some simple themes, which I think will be of interest to particle physicists as well. And the key word here will be instanton. And I will try to demonstrate that instantons in magnetism not only exist, but also have been measured by experimentalists. So the problems which I would like to discuss are the problems of the tunneling, quantum tunneling, of a magnetization field in solids. So if you take a magnet, then the magnetization of that magnet makes a certain field, which you can describe with the magnetization as a function of coordinates. And it has a certain configuration in space. And we also know about magnets that there is a huge number of different metastable states in magnets. The fact that a magnet has magnetic hysteresis is because it has metastable state. So the question here is whether these configurations of magnetizations can tunnel out of that metastable state, that is, of quantum tunneling between two different configurations of the magnetic moment. The simplest problem of that kind would be a small magnetic particle, which may be of 100 angstrom in diameter, but may have a very large number of atoms, like 10 to the 5th number of atoms. And let's say that it is uniformly magnetized in a certain direction, so all spins are ordered by strong ferromagnetic interaction, and it is obvious immediately from the time reversal symmetry that in the absence of the magnetic field, the state of the particle with all spins reversed must have exactly the same energy. So the question is whether it's possible that these two configurations of the magnetization tunnel between each other. This problem will not have any coordinate dependence. And the reason for that is that the exchange interaction which holds these spins in one direction is much greater, typically, than the anisotropy, magnetic anisotropy energy, which determines the orientation of the net magnetic moment. So typical numbers are that the exchange energy is greater than the anisotropy energy by the factor 10,000, 1 million. And this means that the rotation of one individual spin inside that particle costs more energy than the rotation of the whole magnetic moment of that particle if the number of atoms in this particle is less than 10 to the 4th, 10 to the 6th power. So we should expect that for the particle with the number of atoms, this number, the magnetization will tunnel between these two orientations, if it's possible, as a whole, without any special inhomogeneity. There are, however, even more interesting problems, like a problem of the magnetization tunneling in a thin ferromagnetic field. So let's say that it's a thin field which is uniformly magnetized up. And this is the stable configuration of the magnetization. And now you apply magnetic field in the direction opposite to the magnetization. And as this field grows, eventually you will overcome the barrier for the formation of the nucleus here with the opposite orientation of the magnetization. And this nucleus will grow and change the magnetization of the field to the direction of the magnetic field. In fact, these processes happen a lot in tape recorders. If you leave your tape recorder on a hot day in your car, then there are many processes of relaxation of magnetization like that. The question is whether it's possible at very low temperature, actually, in the limit of zero temperature, when the barrier for the nucleation becomes small and the nucleation occurs via quantum tunneling. This would be a very nice, interesting example of a space-time instanton. And the reason I'm talking about instantons will be clear a little later. I would like to mention here one more problem of that kind in a bulk ferromagnet, where you have a domain wall separating two regions of the opposite magnetization, let's say up and down, as this exists in all magnets. And usually these domain walls are trapped by defects. That's why they don't move freely and we have permanent magnets. Now, if you apply magnetic field in the direction of magnetization in this domain, then this domain wants to grow, this domain wants to collapse, which means that the domain wall wants to move to the right, but it is trapped by a defect. And this defect makes a potential barrier on the way of this domain wall to move freely. The question is again whether the domain wall can tunnel out of this metastable state quantum mechanically. Well, if all these processes happen indeed, then the first experimental indication of that would be a non-zero magnetic relaxation in the limit of...
You do that. Can you say yes. A few words about how the large number 10 to the 4, 10 to the 6 come about, when that number comes from, the big number?
Yeah. Well, this number I discussed in relation with the uniform rotation of magnetization rather than a space-time instanton in this problem. And if you want to know where this number is coming from physical point of view,
yeah.
It's coming from the fact that the exchange interaction between two spins, neighboring spins in a ferromagnet, is of Coulomb origin. So basically it is E squared divided by R, where charge, this is charge of electrons, this is the distance between two atoms, multiplied by some coefficient which is smaller than 1 and which represents the overlap of the wave functions here. The anisotropy energy, however, is of the relativistic origin. So in the anisotropy energy, there is a factor V over C squared. That's where this number is coming from. Because it's of spin orbit coupling, that's correct. Yeah, all right, so if all these effects take place, then the first thing we should observe in experiment would be that as temperature goes down to absolute zero, we will have some thermally independent, temperature independent relaxation in magnets. And this has been observed repeatedly in a very large number of systems. Here I show just two systems. And magnetic viscosity is how experimentalists describe magnetic relaxation. So think about magnetic viscosity as the rate of the magnetic relaxation. So here you see two systems. One is small particles of protein, actually ferritin, which has particles of about 5,000 iron atoms inside. And the other system is the film, thin film of a ferromagnetic material. And the way you do experiment, you magnetize an array of small particles, or you magnetize a thin film, and then you study how the magnetization relaxes with time. It may be very slow relaxation, but the sensitivity of the present technique, measuring technique, is so high that you can detect virtually any relaxation there. And what happens, you can see that at temperatures below a few Kelvin, the relaxation is non-zero and temperature independent. So this has been observed in many magnets, that you would naively think when you go to zero temperatures there is no relaxation. All metastable states stay still, but they still relax. And this was the first indication that these processes of tunneling, of magnetization... in these experiments... Yeah, let me switch it off. In these experiments, the relaxation is described in terms of the Arrhenius law, with some effective temperature as a function of real temperature. And if this effective temperature equals real temperature, then when you do the measurement, you will find this. But in fact, what you see in many magnetic systems is this, that this effective temperature goes to a constant, which means that there are some processes of quantum origin. Well,
should I play a unit role? I mean, is there really an energy scale out there? Which is
well, if you believe in Boltzmann constant, yeah, then you can edit.
Start at KV, right? If you start at, say, finite at zero temperature, you can also
yes.
About
KV. So what's your question,
Jim? Well, if you start at zero temperature, yes. Then it's all the temperature, right? Obviously. At zero temperature,
there's no
temperature.
Here, this value, you mean, right? Yeah, this
I would think that's sort of a dimensionless ratio and exponent, right?
Ah, yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. This dimensional ratio is actually a double WKB exponent for the tunneling process. Yeah, exactly. But you can always present it in this way. Yeah. Well, the. Now the question is, how do you describe such processes? And can you really describe them in terms of quantum tunneling of the magnetization vector? Or not to drag everywhere the Bohr magneton, I can write that magnetic moment here is two Bohr magnetons times spin, or the spin field. And for spin, we know the commutation relation. So first, let's see what it means that the tunneling of a spin is macroscopic. Well, if the spin that tunnels, total spin, let's say, is of order 10 to the fifth power, then here I have 10 to the fifth power, and here each term is 10 to the tenth power. So in that sense, spin is almost a classical object, right? Something which is on the right-hand side here is so small compared with these two terms that we can think about spin as a classical object, each spin. And this means that we can measure all three components of that classical spin with very high accuracy. If it is that classical object, then basically the only process where it would reveal itself qualitatively as a quantum object would be tunneling process that I described here, one of these tunneling processes. Now another question here is whether you can describe this tunneling in terms of, I will use sigma for the magnetization field. Then my spin S will be just integral over the volume of this magnetization field. Whether you can describe this in terms of the magnetization field, because magnetization field is something which is formed by many individual spins, In that sense, I should argue that this problem is no different from tunneling of alpha particle out of the nucleus of uranium, because alpha particle consists, as particle physicists know, of four nucleons, and each nucleon consists of three quarks. So it's actually a system which consists of 12 particles, right? 12 quarks. But we don't have any problem with considering tunneling of the alpha particle out of the nucleus of uranium, describing it by just one coordinate x. So what's the reason for that? Well, this is because the energy scale involved here for the tunneling of the alpha particle, alpha decay of the uranium nucleus, is very small compared to all energies of the interaction between the nucleons, between the quarks, and that's why this description is good. Now, it's the same with the tunneling of magnetization. The large energy here is the energy of the ferromagnetic exchange between individual spins. This energy is of the order of the Curie temperature, that is the temperature at which magnetism disappears. And this temperature can be as high as 1000 Kelvin, the exchange temperature. So if you do your experiments at very low temperature, at 1 Kelvin, and below 1 Kelvin, then this, the role of each interaction is just to form the state where the local magnetization is described by some field, spin field sigma, and a good approximation for this spin field sigma would be to write that sigma squared is some constant sigma naught squared, because this constant is determined by that local magnetization formed by the strong exchange interaction. So from the field theory point of view, we are coming to the question of the quantum tunneling of the field over constant length, and we should expect that the appropriate physical models would resemble nonlinear sigma model. Now, another thing which I want to mention here is that because of that analogy, the equation motion for the field sigma is kind of unconventional, because the equation of motion for the spin is this equation of motion. It describes the precession of the magnetization field about a certain effective field, which we obtain by taking a variational derivative of the energy on the field sigma. Now, what is this energy? Typically, I would write energy something like that. I would write the term which is coming from the exchange interaction, right, which I described before. This term wants magnetization to be uniform at each point of space. And then I should write a term here which is responsible for the magnetic anisotropy, this relativistic spin orbit interaction which wants magnetization in a certain direction. There may be other structures of the magnetic anisotropy here. Then I should introduce interaction of the spin field with the external magnetic field, if the magnetic field is there. And finally, I may want to take into account this expression by introducing some Lagrange multiplier here, which will take into account finally that the length of field sigma is conserved. Now, if I take variational derivative this with respect to delta sigma, I will obtain a certain magnetization field, a certain effective field which will enter here. So this equation is not simple because it contains time derivative. Then it also contains, it will contain some second special derivative of the field sigma. But the equation is extremely powerful. This equation describes almost everything in magnetism. Of course, you have to take into account also dissipation terms, which at the moment I'm not talking about, because there is some dissipation of the precession of the magnetic moment, usually dissipation in magnetism is small. This is what makes the problem without dissipation valuable. So this equation describes spin waves, for instance. There are spin waves, oscillations of the magnetization which can propagate through a solid. It describes domain walls. Yeah, if you write that this derivative is, you will obtain solution there for the domain wall square root alpha divided by beta. So there are domain walls, topological objects there. Also, this equation describes the dynamics of domain walls, if you want to study it. And as I said, almost everything you can observe in a magnet. However, yes. Which one? This one?
The beta and the
yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's that's right. It's what you call single ion anisotropy. That's right. It's just uniaxial anisotropy. Right. Well, if you want to have tunneling, then you must have in this energy. Let's say that this is z direction. Z. You want to have something in the Hamiltonian which does not commute with sigma z, right? Well, if n is along the z direction, then all parts of this Hamiltonian except the one with the magnetic field will commute with the sigma z. So you may want to have here the transversal component of the magnetic field. Or you may have here also the transversal magnetic anisotropy, other terms in the magnetic anisotropy. I will give an example a little later which will be responsible for that tunneling. So what I was trying to say here is that relatively recently it has become known that this equation, which is known for 100 years already, also describes all these beautiful processes of quantum tunneling which I discussed before. For that, you just have to go to the imaginary time in this equation, and then there will be some nice exact solutions of this equation which describe processes of quantum tunneling, like this process and like this process. Now, how do you actually make a theory of that quantum tunneling? A very general picture, which is applied to almost any process of tunneling of a field, including the nucleation of a new universe, which has been described in high energy physics a lot in different models. The picture, let's say, the metastable state. This metastable state will have some not precisely defined energy levels, but something which with a great degree of accuracy we can describe as energy levels if this is a long-living metastable state. Now, the decay rate of this metastable state can be obtained with this very simple expression, which is just a statistical sum normalized of the decay rates from each level here, and we are taking into account each level is occupied with the Arrhenius probability here, or Boltzmann probability. Right?
Most likely you want a small V there.
That's correct, yeah. You want small gamma here. Oh, sorry. That's right, yeah. Small, thank you. Less known expression is that this can be written as two imaginary parts of the free energy. And I am honored to write this expression in the presence of Jan Afflig, who first wrote it in his paper, I think it was 89. Sorry, 81, that's right. Yeah, 81, thank you. Well, what does it really mean? The imaginary part of the free energy. Well, free energy is minus T log Z, where Z is the sum in the denominator E minus EM divided by T. So there should be some imaginary part of Z, the partition function as well. Well, it's easy to understand if we look at the particular level n, and then the psi function is proportional to E minus I EMT. Of course, this was a good quantum state, but we should take into account that psi m modulus squared decays e power minus gamma nt, that is, if the particle is there, it doesn't stay there indefinitely, yeah, it goes across the barrier here, which means that the density of particles, which is psi m modulus squared, decays for that, right? And this means that each energy level must have some imaginary part, and it's easy just comparing these two to find out that gamma n must be minus 2 imaginary part of em. Now, if you think about energy levels as having imaginary parts, then immediately you obtain this expression. Yeah, just think about energy levels as having imaginary parts. Yeah, plug the here, and you will see that you will immediately produce this expression using this relation. Now, how do we compute this imaginary part of F or imaginary part of Z, because we assume that imaginary part is small, otherwise there wouldn't be a metastable state. And if imaginary part is small, you can always write it as 2t imaginary part of Z divided by real part of Z. So basically what you need to find is imaginary part of Z. Imaginary part of Z. Partition function. Now if you write partition function in terms of that sigma field, then according to Feynman, this will be the test integral over sigma, which depends on coordinates and time, all configurations of that field. And here we must write minus integral 0, 1 over t, d tau, and Euclidean Lagrangian, which depends on that field sigma.
Assuming the imaginary part Z is small compared to
the part? Yes. Okay. I'm assuming that it is small. Yeah, I'm assuming that's right. I'm assuming that it is small because we are talking about a long-living metastable state. Yes, and it should be small. Right. Well, so that's the mathematics which we have to conduct here. We must write the Lagrangian for that field sigma and then form this imaginary action here and integrate this exponent over all configurations, possible and impossible configurations of field sigma. This depends on tau. And if we want this rate at a non-zero temperature, then we have to compute this integral over all configurations which are periodic with the period which equals 1 over temperature. That's the general shim, which you can find in any book on statistical quantum mechanics. Now, it turns out that the imaginary part of Z comes from the instanton, which is, let me now curse this curse slide, and consider the motion in this inverse potential. Well, everyone knows what instanton is about, I assume. So I'm reversing, let me make it more symmetric. All right. Now I will consider the motion at a certain energy E here. It will be a periodic motion at the bottom of that potential. Of course, when the field depends on coordinates, then I should say something more about that, but I will not go into details. And then I need to find the first the trajectory here, which is periodic in imaginary time with this period. And then this trajectory will contribute most to the path integral, because we are talking here about a macroscopic system. So this is supposed to be large compared to 1. This means that we only have to consider the WKB trajectory, and then small deviations from that trajectory, and this will produce the expression like A, E, to power minus b. So this b is given by the effective tension here for the instanton trajectory, and the prefactor can be obtained by making small deviations from that instanton trajectories, and then you can compute a. Well, one more comment I want to make here is that you may want to see, for instance, how the thermodynamic limit is coming out of it. Well, Lagrangian, Euclidean Lagrangian, you would typically write as kinetic energy plus potential energy. Plus, because kinetic energy in imaginary time changes sign. Well, the instanton at zero temperature would correspond to zero energy here. So for the inverse potential, we start motion here, and this is the bounce trajectory which comes here and then goes back. It takes infinite period to roll down, and then when the period is infinite, when temperature is increasing, then we come to a finite period, and as temperature is growing, we have to find the trajectory with smaller and smaller. So we are coming here down, which means that we're coming up here in energy because the temperature is growing. But eventually there will be a temperature which I will call Tc, and the period will correspond to the period of small oscillations here, and we cannot go above that temperature to obtain a smaller period of motion. So what we say is that from now on, when the temperature is greater than Tc, let's consider the stationary point where the particle is just sitting here, which means that it's just sitting here on the top of the barrier. And for that point, the potential energy is U naught and kinetic energy is zero because there is no motion. And when kinetic energy is zero, I will obtain from here just U naught integral, and integral goes from zero to one over T. So I obtain Arrhenius law U naught divided by T, and you recover the thermodynamical limit here. Of course, all these periodic trajectories will matter when you go to temperatures below this Tc. And Tc is called the temperature of the crossover between thermal activation and quantum tunneling. Material is more or less well established. So from here, let me move to another. Before I do that, I want to mention how you address the problem of quantum nucleation in a field here. Well, it's basically the same approach, but then you have to find an instanton which is periodic with the period 1 over time. And the way you do that, you consider basically the equation.
You're not doing the problem of a block line or the two dimensional.
No, now I want to. I want to talk about the problem where I have a film with which is uniformly magnetized up, magnetic field is applied down, and so I can actually decrease the barrier, make it very small, and so that the probability of tunneling becomes large enough.
The barrier depends on an external magnetic field and you can manipulate it while previously.
That's correct.
Well,
in previous problem also I can manipulate it with the magnetic field, making the barrier smaller. But what I would like to talk about here will be instantons which have special and time dependence. Then at non-zero temperature, when temperature, let's say first temperature equals zero, then there will be an instanton which will look like this. So let's say that this is some angle of the deviation of the magnetic moment from vertical direction. And here I will show r, the distance along the plane, and here I will show imaginary time. Yes?
Just a question about order of magnitude. In the experiments you showed, the Tc was on the scale of a few kelvins, right?
Tc is, it depends on parameters, can be from few kelvin down to any small temperature.
So that's basically controlled by the exchange?
Let me just, in a few minutes, I will write an expression which will show what it is controlled by, all right? Okay. Now, so this would be situation for zero temperature, we have to consider the instanton, which basically corresponds to the rotation of the magnetization within some localized area of the magnet. And this means that it is localized in R. And also it is localized in imaginary time, tau. So it will look like that. Now, if temperature is non-zero, then we have to consider many such instantons on tau axis, which are separated by the distance, which is 1 over temperature. Right? Because now the instant must be periodic in imaginary time with the period 1 over temperature. If temperature is small, a good approximation is just non-interacting instantons like this. You position them with the period 1 over t, large period, and you do the calculation. When the temperature becomes large, then these instantons begin to overlap. So you obtain something like this structure of the instanton. And the calculation is more difficult. And then finally, you come to the situation again at some temperature T equals TC. You actually have on the axis, which is imaginary time, you have a ridge like that. And this ridge corresponds to the situation which I described here when the particle is sitting on the top of the barrier. So there is dependence on tau anymore, and this is the thermodynamic limit. So this is the mathematics involved in this calculation. Now, I would like to take now a toy model and to show you how this calculation goes. In a very simple way, I will derive the answer, I think, in a few lines, at least for the WKB exponent, and then I will argue why the T-factor is what it is.
Let's see, this instanton problem is different from the other instanton problems, for example, in particle physics, QCD or something, because there's no anti-instanton, is that right? You cannot tunnel back. You can only tunnel forward, right?
Well, it depends on the problem. That's right. If you apply magnetic field, you make the problem non-symmetric, so that you tunnel, you rotate, and then you cannot go back, then this would be correct. But also, you can consider a problem where you have a double well potential,
right.
And in that problem, you can talk about the analog
right.
of
well,
instanton
QCD
anti-instanton.
People like David Gross and so on will consider instanton gas, but they're always anti-instanton. So.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
yes.
And it's a measuring thing.
Right,
That's correct. Yeah,
but
it's a measuring
thing. One is the axis to another.
That's correct, yeah. The magnetic moment tunnels back and forth, that will be instanton, anti-instanton.
Of course, the early universe particle physics, you're
concerned
about that.
Right.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So let me take now this toy model. In fact, this toy model will have double well potential. But it's not toy model in a sense that it is directly applied to experiments. And I will show you why. I will consider a small particle now. And for that particle, I will choose the following symmetry. So this will be C, Y, X. Well, first of all, the energy of this particle, very generally, can be written as a quantic form of the magnetic moment if the magnetic anisotropy is coming mostly from the shape of the particle. Yeah, for many particles of non-spherical shape, the magnetic anisotropy is coming from the shape of the particle because the dependence of the energy on the magnetic moment is given by this, where this is the tensor which depends on the shape of the particle. This can be the main anisotropy in the system. Now, you can always reduce this tensor to main axis and write something like, let's say, A mz squared minus B mx squared. Right? And you take into account that mx squared plus my squared plus mz squared is constant. Like this. Now, let me consider this particle here. And this axis z then is called hard axis because the particle doesn't want to be magnetized along this axis. Right? The axis x is easy axis. It wants to be magnetized along x axis. then I should consider tunneling between this state and this state. I will write Lagrangian in the following form, as actually phi x dot minus energy. What is the momentum and the coordinate? Well, canonical conjugate variables here would be angle phi and fz, which equals. Right, so let it take this x, and this is p. And then my Lagrangian will be f phi dot cosine theta minus the energy of the particle as a function of these two angles. You can find out immediately that the equations of motion, which you obtain from here, are equivalent to the precession equation of motion. Here you get the same equation in terms of angles. So now I have these angles, and to compute z, I have to compute integral over angle phi, well, actually, vectors of angle phi. It's a test integral. Then integral over the momentum, which will be integral over cosine theta. Right? And here in the exponent, I will put, let me consider this problem for simplicity at zero temperature, just a problem of quantum tunneling. So the test integral I will write first in real time, dt, and here I have my real Lagrangian, which is f phi dot cosine theta minus energy. And the energy I will write in the form, let me put s here because it will always be proportional to the size of the particle. The energy scales with the size of the particle, so I'll put s in front. And then I will put here k perpendicular cosine squared theta, you will see that it's exactly the same energy, minus k parallel sine squared theta cosine squared phi. Right? Yeah, that's the same energy as is written here in terms of angles in spherical coordinate system. I will play with it a little bit. Let me replace by 1 minus cosine squared, so I will get minus k parallel cosine squared phi plus k parallel cosine squared theta cosine squared phi. Now I can write that this is f, and I will collect terms with cosine squared phi, so we'll have then k perpendicular plus k parallel cosine squared phi multiplied by cosine squared theta. For this term, I will also replace it by 1 minus sine squared and omit the constant, k parallel sine squared phi. In this form, the energy which appears here is 0 when phi equals 0 or pi. So my two stable states corresponds to phi equals 0 or pi, and energy is 0 there. So this is my energy. So I will put it here, and I had minus s, then k perpendicular plus k parallel cosine squared phi multiplied by cosine squared theta minus, or it was plus k parallel sine squared phi. Was it plus or minus? I don't remember. Yes, that's correct. Cosine squared phi, and here plus sine squared phi. Alright. Okay, now if I look at this integral, I see that the integral over cosine theta, that is the integral over my generalized momentum, is a Gaussian integral. So I can conduct this integral explicitly, and then I get the remaining integral over the angle phi only. And then I get in the exponent minus I integral, plus I integral dt. Now s will go in front of the integral. And here I will have phi dot squared divided by 2 perpendicular plus k parallel cosine squared phi. And here I have minus sign, because in the Lagrangian I am subtracting the energy. And the factor of S here. That's fine. Thank you. And minus k parallel sine squared phi. All right. Now I go to imaginary time in this integral. It's I with tau, take into account that this phi dot square changes sign. I get integral d phi e minus integral d tau, and then phi dot, now derivative is over tau, 2k perpendicular plus k parallel cosine squared phi plus k parallel sine squared phi. And that's my integral. Now, this is the effective then Euclidean action on the angle phi. And I first have to find the trajectory of the classical motion which minimizes this effective action. So I write the equation of motion from this Lagrangian, and there is an exact solution of that equation of motion. The exact solution of the equation of motion is that this is equals plus minus arc cosine, and here I will have sinh of omega naught tau divided by plus hyperbolic cosine squared of omega naught tau, where gamma equals k parallel divided by k perpendicular, and omega naught equals square root of k parallel plus k perpendicular. Now, if you draw this phi time tau, then you will find that it switches either from 0 to pi or from 0 to minus pi. So these are two instantons which describe tunneling of the spin either in this direction or in this direction to the opposite orientation. Now you have to substitute these trajectories into the effective action, and the more difficult work comes than to make small deviations from this trajectory and to compute the prefactor of the tunneling rate. This is laborious. I will not show precisely how to do that, but it's absolutely straightforward. And at the end, you will get the following answer, which I will write explicitly on the blackboard. That the transition rate, gamma, equals 16 over square root of pi s to the power 3/2 omega naught gamma 1 plus gamma to the power 1/4 and 1 plus gamma to power 1/2 minus gamma to power 1/2, and the whole thing is to power 2s plus 1. There are two limits of this expression, which I will write down. In the limit when gamma is much greater than 1, gamma is this ratio. And in the limit when gamma is much smaller than 1, omega naught gamma over 4 to the power f, and the other is omega naught, and in the exponent we have minus 2s gamma to the power 1/2. These are two limits. Well, if s is a big number, of course, this probability of tunneling will be very small, right? However, you can select a particle in which coefficient gamma is very, very small. And then it appears here in the exponent. And so even if S is very large, like 100 or 1000, you can still expect in that particle that the tunneling of the magnetic moment will be visible on the time scale of the experiment. There is another way to improve experimental situation. This is for the case when two states of the particle are equivalent, with spin along and opposite the x-axis. Yes?
I'm confused why you don't get this phase cancellation of the two different paths that Lawson...
I will tell about this in a moment. That's right. Yeah, you are raising the correct question.
So the gamma for zero case, you just get a sine Gordon theory, right?
That's correct. Well, not exactly, because yes, similar, but you see there is a mass which depends on the angle phi. Yes, that's right. When k parallel is zero, there is no problem actually, because you don't have two metastable states. When that's right, it's a free field because it can rotate freely in x y plane.
Right.
So then
you're able to.
Right.
No.
If there is a finite temperature, the problem is more complicated, because at finite temperature, you have to find trajectories here which are periodic with the period 1 over temperature. These trajectories have infinite period. Yeah, this is a zero temperature limit, just quantum limit. Well, but Ian asked a correct question, is that, look, we know from Cramer's theory in quantum mechanics that spin which is half integer cannot tunnel, right? It's only the integer can tunnel, 1,000 can tunnel, but 1,000 and a half cannot tunnel because this tunneling removes the degeneracy of the ground state, right? And then you have the splitting of the ground state energy, ground state goes a little lower, but this, according to Cramer's theory, can only be for integer spins, not for the half-integer spin. How do we correct the theory for half-integer spin? Well, let me add here a phase. Cosine theta minus 1, I will write here, minus energy of theta 5. So you can see that I have added to the Lagrangian total time derivative of the angle phi. And this is what you particle physicists know as Wess-Zumino term, and in condensed matter it's known as Berry phase. Now the justification for that, besides getting the correct answer, is that if I consider this spin living on a sphere, because the length is conserved, then when it moves, and let's say that it makes some trajectory around the North Pole, then the area which is swept by the spin on that trajectory, yeah, you can see in a moment that this area equals integral dt phi dot cosine theta minus 1. So that's the geometrical reason behind adding this minus 1 here. Once I have done that, from the path integral for instanton going clockwise and instanton going anti-clockwise, I will have two exponents. So I will have one exponent which is, so you see that there is an integral E I dt phi dot, which becomes, let me write it explicitly here. So it's a path integral I S integral phi dot. So this is what is coming from the this term I added here, minus 1. And this produces integral over dt. So this produces E I S integral d phi, right? Which on one trajectory is E I S phi, on the other trajectory we are computing path integral, so we're adding all trajectories, minus pi s pi, which is double cosine s pi. Now you see how we got this Cramer theorem nicely, that for an integer spin, this term doesn't really matter, it is 1, but for a half integer spin, it is 0. So just applying this geometrical phase, we fix the problem, and I have to put here, actually add to this expression, some of this modulus of cosine s pi. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the way to do it. I don't know how long you want me to talk. yeah, if you have a little... Yeah, a little... I can talk indefinitely, maybe 5 more minutes.
Sounds like a good point, though.
Yeah, it sounds like a good point. Uh-huh. All right. Describe the vacuum with just one spin tunneling around. Let me tell you that if you apply magnetic field, let's say, in this direction, magnetic field, and you help the spin to tunnel, then the barrier becomes like this. So you can achieve very small barrier. And with this very small barrier, you will obtain here in the exponent also a coefficient, which is epsilon 3/2. And this epsilon is 1 minus h divided by hc, where hc is the field which destroys the barrier. So you can make experiment by applying magnetic field in the direction opposite to magnetization, making the barrier very small, so you will achieve a very small coefficient here in the exponent, and so the spin can be as large as 10 to the 4th power, 10 to the 5th power.
So when do you start to see down equilibrium effect? Do you know that the barrier is so small?
Well, eventually when the barrier becomes very small, the WKB approximation will not be correct. That's right, but still it is correct for extremely small epsilon, if you mean that. But we are talking here actually about non-equilibrium effect, because the decay of the metastable state is non-equilibrium effect. Let me show you some experiments here, and I will end on that note with your. So this is the experiment which is designed the following way. There is a squib loop, squib. For particle physicists, squib means superconducting quantum interference device. And it has 2 Josephson junctions. And it's extremely sensitive to measuring the change in the magnetic flux which goes through that squib. So if you put a small particle here on the bridge between the junctions, then a part of the magnetic flux goes this way, and a part of the magnetic flux goes this way. The magnetic flux which goes down here goes through the loop of the junction. And the magnetic field which goes, magnetic flux which goes up, doesn't go through the loop of the junction if the particle is lying on the bridge here. Which means that if the magnetization of the particle reverses, then the direction of the magnetic flux going through the loop of the junction also reverses. And in this experiment, you can measure very accurately the tunneling. First, what experimentalists did here, they measured the direction of the value of the switching field, the field at which the barrier disappears, as a function of the angle which the field makes with the easy magnetization axis. And if this is a particle which has easy magnetization axis, it's a famous curve that was obtained 50 years ago, cycloid, and they confirm that this is indeed a small particle with easy magnetization direction, and that the magnetic moment rotates as a whole uniformly in that particle. It's confirmed by this cycloid. And this is the picture of a small particle lying on that bridge of the microsquid. Now the next thing...
Is it a multi-wall mass group? Is there,
Here? Yeah, this particle is, what are you asking about?
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, this is the method of obtaining the small particles. A nano tube of Kármán is filled with the magnetic material. Yeah, I would rather not go into that. Yeah, but I can give you a reference. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. All right. Now what you do, after you establish this cycloid, You apply magnetic field very close to the value of the field at every angle, which destroys the barrier, and you find the probability of the transition, which you describe in terms of the continuous law E minus the barrier divided by T star of T. And then you plot T star of T. Let me show you how it is done. So it's done here on the insert to this curve. So you plot T star of T, and the crossover temperature from tunneling to thermal activation depends on the angle which the magnetic field makes with the easy magnetization axis. Now you can compute using the method which I presented on the blackboard the dependence of this crossover energy, crossover temperature on the angle, and it turns out that this is described by very simple law. It is cosine 1/6 theta divided by, sorry, cotangent divided by 1 plus cotangent 2/3 theta. The method is exactly the same as I presented on the blackboard for slightly different geometry when magnetic field is now applied at a certain angle theta. And experimentalists found that the dependence of the crossover temperature on the angle indeed follows that curve, which can be obtained from that simple theory. So they believe that indeed this particles different from the ones which I showed on my previous view graph, but of same very small size, and you see that the total spin of the particle, which is this, is about 10 to the 5th Bohr magnitude, so it's pretty macroscopic, that particle. Just one more thing which will take another minute. Now, there is a very popular system which is called Iron 8, and this is not really macroscopic spin. This is only spin 10, but still 20 Bohr magnitude macroscopic compared to the spin of electron. It is formed by 8 electron atoms. The magnetic moments of the 6 on the periphery look in one direction. Each individual spin is 5 half, and this look in the opposite direction. They are very strongly bound here, ferromagnetically and antiferromagnetically. So it's 15 on this 6 minus 5 on this 2. The total spin is 10 in this system. This system has magnetic anisotropy, which is exactly similar to what I described here. It has easy axis and hard axis magnetic anisotropy. Now, magnetic field is applied in this direction, along the hard axis. Then you can find immediately that since the instantons now are transitions from this state and this state, these are now stable states because magnetic field is applied. The stable state is spin looking at some angle to the anisotropy axis and magnetic field, and the equivalent orientation of the spin also, which changed by phi equals 180 degrees. So this is a two canted spins, and the tunneling between them is studied. Now you can find in this model that if you solve instantons, you obtain, instead of cosine s pi, you obtain cosine s pi times 1 minus h divided by h critical. And h critical is the field which destroys the barrier, which means that due to that interference effect, due to the west zooming of phase, there must be oscillation of the tunneling probability on the applied field. And in my last transparency, I will show you this beautiful effect, which was just recently published in Science. So this is the theoretical calculation of this oscillation. And this is the oscillation due to the interference of two instanton projectors in on 8 measured experimentally. The agreement is very good. Well, unfortunately, I don't have time to go to tunneling in fields and extended magnets, which involve space-time instantons. But this is now an ongoing project, and there are also some achievements in that field. So thank you for your attention.
quantum computing people would like to use tunneling between two easy axes of the magnet of the qubit.
Right.
And the suggestion has been, I think there are many other ways of realizing a qubit, but the big problem is decoherence. You have to be able to make 10,000 computations before the whole thing stops.
Yes, exactly.
And it is suggested that the magnets, these macroscopic tunneling of magnets would have much longer coherence time than superconducting or...
Yes, this can be generally true because dissipation...
What's the reason behind that claim? Can you tell us? Why they think that this shoe will have a longer decoherence time than...
The reason for that is this. That if you consider a small magnetic particle or a small cluster like iron 8, it can exist in a superposition of two states, spin up and spin down. This has been proved experimentally. There will be an article coming out of European Physics Letters in 1 month, where experimentalists report that the particle iron 8, this magnetic cluster, in a superposition, quantum superposition of two states, spin up and spin down. So in principle, such a cluster could be used for quantum computation, the unit of quantum computation, but this is probably 1,000 years from now. The answer to the question why is that decoherence is so long, because we know in magnetism for many years that in ferromagnetic resonance, for instance, when the magnetic moment of a small particle or even in a bulk solid is precessing with respect to the orientation of the magnetic field, then it makes in very clean materials like 1 million precessions before this precession decays. So dissipation in magnetism, especially in magnetic insulators, can be very weak. In metals, it's a different question because there are eddy currents in a metallic particle, which you induce by this, and then dissipation can be large. But in insulators, the quality factor, which is the ratio of this basically two times, time which takes the precession to decay and the time for one revolution, this can be 1 million in magnetic insulators.
So that's what makes them. Observation. There isn't the explanation like you developed about the ratio between exchange interaction and anisotropy being the key of getting this 10 to the 4 or 10 to the 6 that we talked a little bit before. There is no physical reasons that you know why a magnetic system would be less noisy than a superconducting one that I could
no,
compare
no, absolutely
from
not.
One dot
no, absolutely not. Magnetic systems can be very little noisy. Yeah,
I understand.
Sure.
Well, just an orbit interaction, the dipole interaction are both weak.
Yes.
They're coupled less strongly.
Relative
to the electromagnetic interaction, you can charge particles.
The problem is reading and writing information on a cluster which is as small as this. But this is a problem for all units suggested for quantum computation. It's not one unit.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Because experiments are coming just now, these last 2 years.
I don't think it's straight from the heart. In marriage, between No. That's your question. Which angle is theta and which one is phi? Is it the one that bends over and the theta phi is neutral for coordinates with the axis?
No, this is exactly as I showed on my picture. So phi was the angle the convention makes with respect to x axis in xy plane, and theta is the angle. This is a spherical coordinate.
Yeah, but it's the z axis. This is confusing to me because the z axis then is the is the one in which the magnetization is preferred.
No. In my picture,
yes,
it was somewhere between two directions along the x
axis. I see. That's why it was confusing because you had a phi changing. So you had the direction was the phi before, and this is where phi cosine theta was. Okay, thank you. I understand. Thank you. Nice talk. Very clear. Really nice. Thanks for giving it.
I think what they can do is Off campus or campus?
Oh, okay, great. And
thank you.
Martin, this is Denise. Is that Beth? On the family roster update, you didn't specify if it was in Goleta or Santa Barbara. And the zip code is 93117?
You have your mail.
Oh, 111. Great. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, not Goleta. Oh, okay. So it is Santa Barbara, though, 93111. Okay. Thank you. Bye. Hi, guys. Oh, well, I don't know what's happening. Yes. Well, no, is it, have you spoke with Gene? Gene said he was sending somebody out this morning, and I haven't seen anybody.
Can't ask to do that, but if that means that
Okay, so I need to speak with Gene then, because that is absolutely, totally unacceptable. No, absolutely not. Somebody has to be out here today. To pick it up? To pick up the machine? Oh. I'm like, what? Okay, thanks a lot. Till 5. All right. Bye.
Thank you.